Menards is the ultimate home improvement destination in the Midwest. Since 1958, we've been supplying you with everything from hardware to automotive needs. We believe in helping you save big money on every project, big or small. From top-of-the-line tools to plumbing supplies, paint, and appliances, we've got you covered. We thank you for making Menards a part of your year. From our family to yours, have a safe and happy new year.
Save big money at Menards.
Find other great podcasts like this one at podmoth.network.
Welcome to Primetime Crime Podcast. I am your host, Kylie, and in this podcast, we are going to deep dive into some lesser-known unsolved true crime cases, from missing persons to unsolved homicides. This is the place where we are going to unpack it all, research it all, talk about it all, and try to bring justice to these families after all of these years. We are going to take it one story at a time, one case at a time, and hopefully justice will be ours.
Welcome to the Getting Down and Wordy podcast ad.
What do we do on this podcast?
Well, it's the first Edamusical podcast.
Can I try that again in real words so that people can understand?
Fine. We talk about the intersection of popular music and language.
Oh, can we also talk about Eurovision?
Okay.
Find us on Apple and Spotify.
We are a Podmoth Network podcast.
Welcome to the Brutal, Bizarre, and Boozy podcast. I'm Declan, the son.
And I'm Jane, the mom. This is the podcast where we talk about brutal crimes, bizarre occurrences, and get you drunk with cocktails themed around one of our stories. To lighten things up, we'd like to end our time with a chaser. Please keep in mind some of our stories might be upsetting to young or sensitive ears.
We love hearing from our listeners, so feel free to contact us by email or social media. You can find our contact info in the show notes for this episode. If you'd like to support us through Patreon, you can find us there at Brutal, Bizarre, and Boozy Podcast, or use the link in our show notes.
Welcome back, everybody. Thank you for joining us once again for another Brutal, Bizarre, and Boozy episode. Yes. How are you doing today, Mom?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Doing good. Recovering from the holidays, but
we still have New Year's. Yeah.
Yeah.
Got to make it through New Year's now.
I got to find some like liver supplements or something, but what story do you have for us today?
I'm going to be telling you my story. I've got a kind of a two-parter, sort of, but not really, from Peru. They're both bizarre stories, but two different bizarre things this week.
Are you going to be talking about the aliens?
Possibly next week.
Okay. Okay.
I'm going to be talking about the Nazca Lines this week.
Okay.
Yeah. Next week will be the mummies / aliens /
I'm glad you did.
Yeah. So that'll be next
Those
week.
Those aren't the ones that came out in Mexico, right? That the Mexican government said was fake?
Those
are different, right? Okay.
I think so. Yeah.
Okay.
Although some people think the mummies are fake, but you get to decide for yourself.
Yep. That's most of what our podcast is coming up with different ideas.
Yeah. What's your story today?
I'm going to be talking about the Gilgo Beach serial killings.
Ooh, a serial killer.
And one that's come into recent news. But to go with it, I have the Long Island iced tea cocktail. To make this, it's 3/4 ounce vodka, 3/4 ounce white rum, 3/4 ounce tequila, 3/4 ounce gin, 3/4 ounce triple sec, 3/4 ounce simple syrup, 3/4 ounce lemon juice, and top it off with Coke or Pepsi if you're a psychopath.
Right.
Garnish with a lemon wedge.
Okay. So, I'm scared of this.
If you're ever at an all-inclusive whatever, resort, cruise, whatever it is, this is a go-to. Because there's enough alcohol in there, even if it's watered down, if you drink enough of them, it'll work.
It's gonna be gross. Right. So I just have a prediction. I don't think I've ever drank one before, so we'll see. It is strange how close to iced tea it looks.
It's not great, but it does the
job.
Yeah,
it's gross.
I think I had, only time I've ever had one was at the all-inclusive with Carter.
Okay.
Because he was drinking those all day, and I got one, and I was like, oh, it's actually not bad, but it's probably half watered down. I mean, if you
at
really
a resort, yes.
If you really want to get your money's worth, you get beers, because they can't water the beer down if they just crack it open in front of you. So
true. Everything else was watered down. Can confirm.
Yes, definitely. So let's get into this killer. On May 1st, 2010, police received a call from Shannon Gilbert, who told the dispatcher that a man was chasing her. The dispatcher could hear her running from house to house, knocking on doors and screaming before going silent. Police officers were sent to the area, but Shannon was never found. Months later in December, a police officer and his canine were walking on Gilgo Beach when they discovered human remains.
That's never
a Everyone initially thought that, see, walking your dog on the beach, mm-hmm. granted, I think they were working at the time, but still.
Okay.
Dogs on the beach.
I know. Don't walk your dog.
Yep.
Because you'll find a dead body.
Yeah, get a treadmill. Teach your dog how to walk on a treadmill.
Right.
So everyone thought it was Shannon initially, but that's when they discovered even more remains closely nearby.
Ew. Yeah.
In total, 4 bodies were initially found. The bodies were able to be identified as Melissa Bellarthamy, Maureen Barnes, Megan Waterman, and Amber Costello. 3 out of the 4 of them have been wrapped in burlap sacks and placed near the beach.
Ooh.
All the victims discovered were sex workers in the early to mid-2000s.
Okay.
Maureen was reported missing by her sister in 2007 after she had taken a trip to New York for work. She called her sister from Midtown Manhattan before disappearing. After she had gone missing, police noticed activity on her cell phone coming from Long Island. In July 2009, almost 2 years after Maureen went missing, Melissa Bartholomew, went missing from Midtown Manhattan. Melissa moved from Buffalo to New York to pursue a career in hairdressing before finding herself in sex work. About a week before Melissa went missing, her little sister began, or sorry, a week after Melissa went missing, her little sister began getting phone calls from her sister's phone.
No.
Her sister was obviously surprised to see Melissa calling and immediately answered and asked where she was. A man responded and says, "Oh, honey, this isn't Melissa," and proceeded to tell her that her sister had been murdered.
No, that's shitty.
When police checked the location of the call, it was pinged in Midtown Manhattan. Again, where the previous victim went missing.
Right.
Almost a year later, Megan Waterman disappeared from a hotel in Long Island. On June 10th, 2010, Megan traveled out to Long Island to work. She was seen on the hotel cameras checking in before going to meet a John. This would be the last time anyone would ever see Megan. A few weeks later, police tracked her phone activity to a Long Island neighborhood called Massapequa Park. Amber Costello lives 7 miles from Massapequa Park. God, that's a fucking tongue twister.
That's a mouth.
That shift 7 times fast. So Amber was an addict and used sex work to pay for or provide her with drugs. She would often tell her roommate about her Johns, describing one looking like an ogre and driving a Chevy Avalanche.
Okay.
Apparently, he called her and offered to pay her $1,500 for the night, which was significantly higher than what she normally made.
Wow.
She said goodbye to her roommate and left the house without her purse or her phone and got into the Chevy. The roommate didn't see who was driving the car that night, but he believes he had seen him before. He was able to provide police a brief description of the driver, but this information wasn't fruitful until years later. Which, I remember seeing this story in the news when this dude first got arrested. Like,
yeah.
Yeah, it's... So her roommate told police that there was one guy who insistently called her, and he believes the driver of the Avalanche was also the person who kept calling. Police were able to determine that the man who kept calling her was using a burner phone, and the three other missing women also received calls from a burner phone before going missing.
Was it the same burner phone?
No, it was different ones, I believe.
Okay.
But after finding these remains, the police kept searching for Shannon and made some horrific discoveries. In the search for Shannon, they discovered six more sets of remains. Along the same beach line.
Wow, I didn't realize there were so many.
They couldn't link all of them to this guy, but there was a lot. So victim number five was Jessica Taylor, who was an escort that went missing in 2003.
Wow.
Another set of remains police called Jane number six has now been identified as Valerie Mack, who also worked as an escort and went missing in 2000.
Jeez.
Number seven, to investigator's surprise, was a toddler.
Oh, I don't like that.
Number eight was an Asian male dressed in woman's clothing.
Oh.
Number nine was a female skull belonging to Karen Vergata, an escort who disappeared in 1996. And number 10 were female remains from a victim cops nicknamed Peaches because of a tattoo she had. Although her remains were found 6 miles away, police say DNA has confirmed that Peaches is the mother of the toddler.
Oh.
Yeah.
So are you going to talk about like why potentially they were both out there?
There's not really any information on that I could find.
I'm guessing that she brought the toddler with her and
or he went
killer.
To her house and I don't
yeah oh I don't like to think about that
yeah yeah so over a year later in 2011 Shannon's remains were found. However, police believe she actually drowned rather than being murdered. To them, it looked like she was running from something and got stuck in a bog and ended up drowning.
It's that quicksand we talked about.
Yeah.
People getting stuck
quicksand.
In. Quicksand. Something I thought I would have to experience when I was a child.
For real.
Because it was in every fucking TV show.
And cartoon.
Somebody
and
always got caught in quicksand.
After years of investigation, the Gilgo Beach killings were going cold until a new task force was formed in February 2022. The new task force took a look at all the case files and evidence previously collected. They looked at the best connections between the murders. That was the burner phone calls.
Okay.
All the police calls to the victim took place in a couple blocks of Massapequa Park. Or from Midtown Manhattan.
Okay.
So there was two main locations that these burner phone calls were coming from. I think they were different phones, but they determined that they were burner phones somehow. I'm not quite sure how, but I'm sure they have a way of like,
probably
they ran out of minutes on this and or whatever. But
right, but you can also, I'm guessing they could take a phone number and take it back to like, oh, this phone number
like a company,
is serviced
like
by
a,
Verizon versus T-Mobile versus whoever.
Like on
and
or whatever
then,
those burner phones of Walmart are. Yeah.
Yeah.
So now that they had a place to look and a general description of the suspect, they began looking in Massapequa Park for an ogre driving a Chevy Avalanche. This is when they caught a glimpse of Rex Huerman, an architect who lived in Massapequa Park and worked in Midtown Manhattan. Two places that the phone calls were coming from.
Right.
They started following Rex around and noticed him going into a phone store and making a payment on a burner phone. This strengthened their suspicions, and they can, yeah. So they started continuing to follow Rex. While following him, they saw him throw out a slice of pizza in Midtown. They quickly retrieved the pizza and had the DNA tested.
Of course.
This is when they discovered that Rex's DNA that was on the pizza had matched the DNA from a hair found on Megan Waterman's body. So,
okay.
If this is a cautionary tale for anyone, just finish your pizza crust. You wouldn't have got caught if you finished his pizza crust.
Don't be a baby and throw out your pizza crust. I mean,
yep.
Just really? What are you, it,
some
five?
Some hot honey, some just, parmesan yeah. and pepper flakes. Just eat it. It's not that bad.
Be a fucking grown up and finish your pizza.
What I like to do is leave a little extra and then you eat it sideways. So you still get a little bit of the pizza parts, but then you also get the crust
that makes sense.
Honey or the ranch on it.
Smart.
So after discovering this, they quickly arrested Rex and charged him with multiple counts of murder in 2023. Rex was married with a stepson, and his wife was from Iceland and would take their kids to see their parents. And they believe that this is when he would do his killings, because they all took place around the summertime. Well, majority of them took place around the summertime, I should say. But
I got it.
So Rex pled guilty to the 7 murders he has been charged with and is currently sitting in jail waiting for his trial.
He pled guilty, pled not guilty.
Not guilty.
Okay. I thought you said guilty and I was like, what? No. It's done?
No. He pled not guilty, and I think the reason they haven't started the trial yet is because they're trying to get more evidence to connect him to as many murders as possible. Yeah. Because, I mean,
yeah,
his MO is pretty solid. Like, he finds prostitutes and kills them, but
yeah,
I don't know. I'm sure they're still trying to make sure they got the best chance to lock this motherfucker up forever.
I looked at a picture of him. He does kind of look like
an ogre. Like an ogre. He looks like human Shrek, but not like the handsome human Shrek.
No. It's interesting that he had previously used the sex workers that he later killed. It sounds like. What like he met with them multiple times.
Well, that was the case with the Amber Costello, I believe was her name. But that's because her roommate knew about it and talked to him about her escapades.
Yeah.
So he had an idea, and that's kind of the whole reason he got caught, is because he used her multiple times.
Because it looked like an ogre.
Drove a very distinguishable car. If you drove a fucking
Honda Accord, nobody's going to notice.
An Accord, yeah. But a Chevy Avalanche, that's like the stupidest looking vehicle of all time.
They are pretty dumb. Oh, I don't think it, not of all time.
No.
No, you're forgetting about the Pontiac Aztec.
That just looks like an SUV. This looks like they cut the top off of a Suburban. It looks so stupid. It's like they tried to make a truck that is less capable than a truck.
Worse is the Cybertruck.
Yeah, true.
Cybertrucks are dumber looking. At least that's bulletproof. Well.
At least it has some function. A Chevy Avalanche? What are you going to do with that?
Not good.
Let's hear about your story, Mom.
Okay, we're going to go to Peru, specifically the desert of southern Peru, and it is one of the driest places on Earth. A high arid plateau where wind and sun have scoured the land for thousands of years. Stretching between the towns of Nazca and Palpa, this vast rust-colored plain conceals secrets far older than most civilizations now remember. Among them are the Nazca Lines. These are massive figures etched into the ground that only reveal their full form when seen from above, such as from an airplane. They are among the most extraordinary of humanity's.
Nazca? Sorry.
N-A-Z-C-A.
Okay.
Yeah, we'll you gotta go check on. Out some of these pictures.
Oh.
They're wild.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Whoa. I would recommend everyone listening, go look at them right now. That looks crazy.
Yes, go check them out if you haven't seen them. They're really freaking cool. They are among the most extraordinary of humanity's ancient imprints. Yet even after decades of study, well, close to 100 years worth of study, actually, their purpose and meaning remain subjects of debate. The Nazca Lines lie in the Nazca Desert, a barren region of southern Peru's coastal plain, part of the Rio Grande de Nazca River Basin. This environment is relentlessly dry with minimal rainfall, which has preserved items that might have long since crumbled elsewhere. The soil is covered with iron oxide coated pebbles that give the desert its reddish hue. Beneath this surface lies lighter colored earth. When the darker rocks are removed, the contrast reveals striking patterns etched into the ground. The lines were created mainly by Nazca culture, which inhabited the region roughly 200 from about 200 BC to 600 CE. So several hundred years.
What does CE mean?
Current era.
Oh, it's not AD anymore?
It depends on who you ask.
Why I know. Are we changing shit? What the fuck?
We got to rename stuff just to make it confusing so old people like me are constantly on our toes going, that's not what it was before. Some geoglyphs
I'm not even that old,
may be
and
older. Okay, I know. Whatever. I know, because it's silly. It's, I don't know. I think they changed it because the, like, BC was... you know, referred to as before Christ, and then AD is after death. And so people didn't want it solely around a religious figure, is my guess.
But if it's still BC, then that means it's still before.
Before but Common also, Era. I think that's what they're calling it now. So BCE, before Common Era.
But also, what about the, like, 35, 40 years that he was alive. What do we call that?
I don't know. That has always confused me. I could not tell you.
Okay.
I don't know.
If you know,
that
drop
is
a
an
comment,
excellent
let
question.
Us know.
Yeah, please tell us because we don't know. Back to Nazca. I really want to say NASCAR, but it's Nazca. Some geoglyphs may be older, created by earlier cultures, such as the Paracas. I don't know if I said that right, but that's what we're going to go with. The Nazca were skilled in agricultural engineering, especially in water management, which was crucial knowledge for survival in such a dry landscape. Their major settlement at Kawachi, probably mispronounced that too, although I did look it up and I don't know. Kawachi, we're going to go with Kawachi. Contains dozens of pyramids and platforms used for ceremonial purposes, overlooking the very plains where the lines are spread. So it's not the old, the lines are not the only thing down there that were used or considered part of the cultural experience, if you will.
When There's did you say pyramids they and stuff. Suspect these were made?
The lines. Possibly 200 BC to 600 CE.
Okay.
But could be older than that because it's hard to figure that out.
Because when you said the like complex waterways, it made me think of the Aztecs. But those were like 12th century. So that's way, way later.
Yeah, I don't know. Although the Nazca lines are ancient, they are not lost in the sense of being completely unknown. Early Spanish writings mention unusual markings in the land. Some explorers compared the lines to trail markers or ancient roads. When transformed, What transformed the Nazca lines from local oddities into international marvels was aviation. Flying. It's a big deal. Like I said, you really can't see what they are except from the air. In the 1920s and 1930s, as air travel increased over Peru, pilots began noticing long striking lines on the desert floor that formed curious shapes. The first academic report came from a Peruvian archaeologist who walked the terrain in the early 1900s and shared findings at a Lima conference several years later. Soon after, what's that?
There's something else you could use to see these, and it's a UFO.
Oh, yes.
And hovered also above from and the told air. Them which way is car. Right.
Like a giant etch-a-sketch.
Yeah.
They're just down there like, take 5 steps forward and move some rocks.
It abducts them and puts them in the right spot.
Yep. That's hilarious. In the early 1940s, an American historian flew over the plains and recognized both straight lines and animal shapes, like birds and spiders, that were carved into the earth. He noticed that some lines aligned with celestial events like the winter solstice sunrise, prompting ideas that the lines may have been used for astronomical observation. Later, a German mathematician and archaeologist spent decades studying the geoglyphs and advocating for their preservation. After further study, it was proposed that many lines and figures were intentionally placed to align with astronomical phenomena. This suggested that the lines were a giant celestial calendar. The Nazca lines can be grouped into 3 main types. Straight lines that extend for miles across the desert plain with remarkable precision. Geometric shapes that include trapezoids, triangles, spirals, zigzags, and other simple shapes. Figurative geoglyphs, or representations of animals, such as a spider, hummingbird, monkey, whale, and some plants, as well as human or humanoid figures. And yes, so I said humanoid.
I wonder if, because like this isn't the only civilization to have seemingly astrological knowledge. I wonder if, since they didn't have any light pollution, or probably very little back then, I wonder if they could see a lot more and study the sky a lot more.
Like, I bet you.
Because I don't think I've ever been to a place that has zero light pollution.
I haven't, and I have tried.
We've been close with that 4th grade field trip that we took.
Right.
But that still there was has still some. Like that's,
yeah. Because we weren't that far out of town.
No, but you could see a lot more out there, I feel. But
yeah,
still like is not zero light pollution, which makes me think.
One of the things we wanted to go to the hot springs. That was one of the reasons we wanted to go there, because like an hour and a half east of the hot springs is a dark sky sanctuary. And we were wanting to go out there specifically to stargaze and see what we could see. Because I've never seen like the crazy night sky with
galaxy.
Yeah, we can't see that. Yeah. With the light pollution in town. And I always joke that it's make-believe and doesn't exist. And your dad's like, no, it really does. I've seen it because I've been out camping in the middle of the night. And I'm like, whatever. And when we went to the hot springs this last time, it was a full freaking moon. So I couldn't see shit.
Mm.
Except for the nighttime rainbow, which I've never seen before, and that was freaky and weird.
That was weird.
Back to our lines. There are hundreds of straight lines and geometric forms and dozens of pictorial figures, many of them enormous. Some extend hundreds of feet in length. The images vary widely in complexity. Some geometric lines are purely abstract, while animal shapes are sophisticated and carefully proportioned. For instance, the condor figure measures over 400 feet, and a pelican figure reaches nearly 1,000 feet.
Holy shit.
So they're not tiny.
Pelican. Which one is the... Oh, it might be labeled differently at the thing I'm looking at.
Could be.
There's a heron. Maybe that's what it is. It's like a giant squiggly lion bird.
They're big, though. There's a condor. They're not just little tiny...
No.
Like,
400 feet is fucking huge.
400 feet, 1,000 feet. I can't imagine. I can't draw with a pen and paper and have it look like anything representative of an animal.
I think
yet
I could draw
doing
the condor, but that's
ground level.
These look like a drawing I could do, but the fact that it's 400 feet fucking long to 1,000 feet long, like, what the fuck?
They're not seeing it from above, so it's not like the fact that they could do it at all is amazing to me, but you might be right about the UFO and the Etch-a-Sketch.
Yeah, it does look like Etch-a-Sketch lines a little bit.
Right? A little bit. The way the lines were made is relatively well understood. The Nazca people removed the darker oxidized surface stones to expose the lighter soil underneath. The simple contrast created lines that remain visible today because of the extremely dry climate, which limits erosion. Archaeological evidence supports this technique. Wooden stakes discovered at the end of some of the lines have been carbon dated to times consistent with Nazca chronology, showing that these were intentionally constructed. Well, of course they were intentionally constructed. That shit didn't make itself.
Yeah.
Nature didn't move the stones in a geographic pattern.
I'd be way more impressed.
Yeah. Studies have demonstrated that the Nazca could have made these long, precise lines using basic surveying tools, such as sighting rods and ropes, sometimes starting with small ground drawings and scaling them up across the plane, which,
I can see that for some of them, but the monkey one doesn't have a single straight line on it. So I feel like it'd be really hard to...
I know I've seen the monkey one before, but now I have to go look.
Like, The birds have a bunch of straight lines. A lot of the other ones have straight lines. I could see using like,
kind of survey tool.
But that thing is a giant spiral and then a monkey. Like, there's not a single straight line on there. So that'd be hard
weird.
To feel.
Yeah.
You can see they like got better at it. The monkey might have been the first one, and then they
could be.
By the time they got to the spider, they perfected. The spider's the coolest looking one. That one's crazy looking.
I feel like they had to know that something was up there to see the drawings.
What do you mean?
Well, they're making these intentionally. They're drawing a picture of something. Mm-hmm. They can't. It's not like looking at a painting where you draw on it and then everybody walks by and is like, cool, cool, cool. That's neat. You can see it from the ground or you can see it when you walk by. They had to think something was up there looking down at their pictures.
Yeah, because you can. Okay, I see what you mean now. Yeah.
Yeah. Otherwise, why do it?
True.
I don't know. Maybe they thought it was gods or something or. The UFO
one.
People.
There's one labeled astronaut.
Ooh. I gotta go look up the astronaut one. Astronaut?
It just looks like a guy, but I mean, The picture I was looking at labeled it as astronaut, so maybe.
Yeah. I mean, that one's at least on the side of a hill, kind of.
Yeah.
You can kind of see.
But it's got those big gray alien eyes.
Yeah, it does. I don't like it. Hmm. The purpose of the Nazca lines has been debated since their discovery, and there are multiple theories ranging from astronomical calendars to religious ceremonial functions. Early scholars believe the lines worked as an astronomical calendar.
Are you the year of the monkey or the year of the astronaut?
Oh, yeah, I don't know.
Or the year of the condor.
Right. They noted certain lines appeared to align with celestial events such as the solstices, suggesting they might mark times important for agricultural cycles.
See,
one researcher, I
don't understand that. How are they determining that?
I don't either.
It's lined up with certain astrological events. It happens in the sky, not on the ground.
I know.
Right? I mean,
yeah,
that part doesn't make sense.
I don't know. It doesn't make sense to me either. They noted certain lines appeared to be... I said that already. One researcher also proposed that some animal figures correspond to star constellations. You know, like the bear and... I personally think that whoever thinks animals are in the sky was high as a kite when they looked up at the stars. Because I don't see... I can
maybe
see the Big Dipper.
Maybe it's because we can't see them. Maybe it's because
Good point. Okay. Maybe they weren't high.
Go there and you get just the right amount of stone, you can draw animals, like connect the dots. I don't know.
That could be, yeah. Some later researchers cast doubt on these strict astronomical interpretations. Studies by astronomers found little consistent evidence that the lines were systematically aligned with anything in the sky. Plus, I feel like it's one of those things, like if you're standing in a certain spot, it lines up. But then if you take a step to the right or left, it's no longer lined up. You know?
I don't know, they're so far away. It's probably, you can spot them weird. From wherever you're standing. I don't know.
Yeah. More recent research points towards ritual and ceremonial functions. Many archaeologists suggest that the lines were part of a cultural practices focused on water, because water is crucial to life in the desert. So they were focused more on like, hey, let's do the ceremony to make it rain, like a rain dance or something maybe. Evidence for this includes platforms at the ends of the lines, which may have served as gathering places during processions or ceremonies to appeal to deities for rain and fertility. These ideas echo the importance of water in Nazca culture and archaeological finds linking the lines to settlement and ceremonial sites. Even today, researchers are uncovering more geoglyphs. A Japanese team using aerial surveys and advanced detection methods announced the discovery of over 140 previously unidentified figures in 2019. These new findings suggest that the total number of geoglyphs, including smaller or fainter designs, may be much higher than previously thought. Archaeologists continue using technologies such as drones, 3D imaging, and AI to map the territory and identify patterns invisible to the naked eye. Which really makes me wonder, did they do it and it faded over time, or did they create it knowing that it couldn't be seen by the naked eye and therefore could only be seen by the aliens. UFO aliens? Yep. These tools have revealed both new features and new complexities in the landscapes, hinting that ancient Nazca's symbolic expression was richer than once assumed. The Nazca lines are not just archaeological wonders, they are also fragile. In 1994, UNESCO designated the lines, geoglyphs, and Pampas of Jumana as a World Heritage Site for their cultural significance and outstanding universal value. Despite this status, the lines face threats from both natural and human causes. Shocking. People are fucking with it. Heavy rains in 2009 damaged part of the hand geoglyph, demonstrating how rare weather events can alter the desert flatland. Human activity has also caused harm.
To be fair, the hands one looks like the ugliest one. So as long as the other
one. Maybe that was the first one. They were like, that doesn't even look like a hand. That's a pitchfork, bro. Come on.
Nah, it looks like a fucking bean with feet, like monster feet.
Oh.
On this picture that I'm looking at.
That's funny. In 2018, a commercial truck driver drove across a portion of the site, leaving deep scars in the desert surface. Maybe the aliens were using him as a etch-a-sketch and they wanted two parallel lines.
Could you imagine how much trouble he got in? Holy shit.
No kidding, right?
Oh, big mistake.
Not good. Conservation
it's in the fucking
measures.
Dirt. Why is the truck driver in the dirt? Okay, whatever.
Right. Conservation measures have been subject to political debate. In mid-2025, Peru's government reversed a decision to reduce the protected area around the Nazca lines after outcry from scientists, UNESCO representatives, and the public, highlighting ongoing tension between heritage protection and development pressures. I don't know. Just leave it alone. After decades of study, the Nazca lines are better understood than when they were first spotted from the sky. Archaeologists know how they were made, who most likely made them, most likely, and approximately when they were created. They also understand that the desert's unique climate preserved these marks almost intact for centuries. Yet the deeper meaning of the lines remain pretty elusive. Were they astronomical markers, ritual pathways, pilgrim routes pointing towards sacred sites, or symbolic appeals to force the Nazca believed controlled water, fertility, and life itself?
Alien graffiti.
Oh, I like that. Yep. It's graffiti.
Yep. Alien graffiti.
That's our single answer.
Yep. Well, do you have a chaser for us?
I do have a chaser. It is a watch recommendation for a show on the MGM Plus network, but we watched it on Prime, called Nine Bodies in a Mexican Morgue.
Okay.
It
sounds like a card game.
Yes. That's funny. It's a show about a plane crash in a Mexican jungle, and everybody on the plane ends up dying except one person or more. And nobody knows who's killing the people and why and how and what for. And it's a pretty good little show.
That sounds interesting.
We binged it.
How many?
I don't know that I. Yes. Yeah, just one season. Do you have a chaser for us today?
Yes, my chaser is another video game recommendation.
Mm.
So this one is a little different. It's so there's this game studio that makes a bunch of like the same type games that are choose your own adventure movies is the best way I can describe it.
Okay.
So they hire like real actors. And I think I talked about one of the games before in a previous chaser called The Quarry, but they get like real actors like Brenda Song from Sweet Life of Zack and Cody. She plays one of the characters in The Quarry, but they made a new game that went completely under my radar. And they based it on like another video game series called Dead by Daylight, which is like a a horror game, basically. And so they added, like, they combined the two and made it, like, so the way the game works is a lot of it is cutscenes, but then there's, like, you have to have your hands on the controller and pay attention, because, like, if you're in a cutscene and you're getting chased and you have to jump over like a broken bridge and like kind of get across a broken bridge, you have to hit like X in a certain amount of time or else your character can fall and die. And then that character's dead for the rest of the game. But these games have different endings, kind of like a choose your own adventure book. So if you go back and you choose a different option, you could save this character, or there's a bunch of like little hidden Easter eggs and stuff. And
what's the name of the game?
The name of the game is The Casting of Frank Stone.
The Casting of Frank Stone. Wow, that's a mouthful.
Yeah. So I don't think this one is for people that played Dead by Daylight, because that's like the game universe that it's based on. And I used to play that years ago with Carter and Tucker and all them. We got really into it. So when I saw that, because like I like all the games they made. The Quarry, they have Until Dawn, which recently got turned into a movie on Netflix. The movie sucks, though. but there's other games that they made, and I like, it's really fun to play, just like if you have a free weekend and you want to play video games with someone on your couch, because the co-op mode in that is called Couch Co-op. And so you, let's say there's seven characters. You only play it with one controller and you pass it back and forth. So like each person selects which character they want. And then when that character's turn is to play, you just hand the controller to whoever selected that character.
Okay.
Cool. And so it's kind of those fun games where it's like, oh, we're not doing shit today. We're just going to have a couple drinks, maybe some edibles, just play video games on the couch. It's one of those fun little things to do. But that is my chaser.
Cool. I like it.
Well, thanks for listening, everybody. Thanks for joining us once again.
Yes. Thank you.
Love you, Mom.
Love you too. Bye.
Bye.
Hey, friends. Thank you for supporting our podcast. Please share our show with your brutal and bizarre friends. Give us a boozy follow on your favorite podcast platform. If you're feeling extra generous, we'd appreciate a 5-star rating or review as well. But maybe do that sober so all the letters are in the right place.
You can find all our contact information in the show notes. We love hearing from you, and if you're interested in helping us stock the bar for our future boozy episodes, you can find our Patreon link in the show notes as well.